This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiologists' extended learning series featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You're about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, you will have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access to your mobile device. And each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/AXL. Listen now to a talk that Jerry Naccarelli had with Steve Wiviat, Associate Professor of Cardiovascular Medicine at Harvard Medical School. They discuss dapagliflozin effect of cardiovascular events, the DECLARE-TIMI 58 trial.
Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
So let's get started. Obviously, diabetes is a significant risk factor in cardiovascular disease, and there's a lot going on in this area. Can you give us a little bit of a preamble of the importance of diabetes and cardiovascular disease and where we are, you know, which set up this trial?
Sure. So as you said, we've all known for many years that diabetes was one of the most important risk factors for atherosclerosis. Patients who have diabetes are at high risk for heart attack and stroke, of course. And with the increasing rates of obesity and diabetes, particularly type 2 diabetes in the United States and worldwide, the influence of this has only been growing. But I think something that people think about a little bit less frequently, but probably is equally important, is that diabetes is probably one of the key risk factors for heart failure, and that we see that the rates of admission for hospitalization for heart failure for patients with diabetes, even those without known ventricular function, are quite high, and that this is beginning to be recognized as a key area for evaluation and discovery.
So if we look at the last decade, this has been a real era of new drugs for diabetes, especially their relationship with cardiovascular events. And of course, there was even a regulatory component that caused some of these trials. Maybe we could talk about why was this trial performed, you know, in that environment?
Yeah, sure. I think that's a great point that, you know, dating back really decades, we've had good evidence that blood sugar lowering improved microvascular outcomes, of course, kidney disease, peripheral neuropathy, eye disease. But there really hasn't been much in terms of benefit in terms of either heart failure or ischemic heart disease. And in fact, if you recall, there was some concerns with some of the drugs. Rosiglitazone was the one that really tipped the balance, where there was an analysis showing an increase in myocardial infarctions. So back about a decade ago, the FDA indicated that for new drugs in diabetes, they had to at least prove that they were safe from a cardiovascular standpoint. So previously, drugs could be approved simply because they lowered blood sugar. You had to do trials that involved a few hundred patients and might have followed them for, at a maximum, you know, 6 months or to a year. But this new regulation where safety had to be proven, you had to collect a large number of cardiovascular events. So it increased the size of the trials and the duration of the trials, and that really has led us to understand quite a bit more about how these therapies affect cardiovascular disease.
So what was the primary hypothesis for the DECLARE-TIMI 58 trial?
DECLARE-TIMI 58 studied a drug called dapagliflozin. It's an SGLT2 inhibitor. This class of drugs blocks the resorption of glucose and sodium in the kidney. What that does is it causes glucosuria, naturesis, lowers blood pressure, lowers weight, and of course lowers blood sugar. And so with these positive effects on cardiovascular risk factors, the hypothesis of the study was that it would be safe from a cardiovascular standpoint, would be used to meet the regulatory requirements, but there was also a hope that it might reduce important cardiovascular events like heart failure and ischemic events. So we designed it not only as a safety study, which would have been a smaller size study, but we powered the study to look at these efficacy endpoints. So we randomized patients to dapagliflozin or placebo. There was 17,000 patients enrolled, and we followed them forward for about 4 years.
So what were the pivotal results of the trial?
So for the trial, we had two co-primary endpoints. One was cardiovascular death and hospitalization for heart failure. The other was a standard MACE outcome, myocardial infarction, stroke, and cardiovascular death. What we saw was that the first of these co-primary endpoints, cardiovascular death and hospitalization for heart failure, was significantly reduced. It was lower by about 17%. This was driven predominantly by the reduction in hospitalization for heart failure, which was reduced by about 27%. So really quite a substantial reduction. This was present whether patients had established cardiovascular disease or not. For the MACE outcome, we did meet the regulatory requirements of safety. So we demonstrated that there was no increased risk of MACE, but there was also no decreased risk there. So the key outcomes from the primary endpoints were those: a significant reduction in heart failure predominantly, and safety with regard to standard cardiovascular MACE.
If we just look at the results of this trial, are there some clinical implications specific to these findings?
Yeah, I think so. So a couple of things that emerged from this trial that are important. One is that compared to other studies in this area, this was a broader population. So we took people not only who had cardiovascular disease, but patients with diabetes who were at risk. So if you were over 55 and you had diabetes and you had either high blood pressure, had elevated lipids, or smoked, you could get into this trial. And those patients had a similar benefit in terms of the heart failure reduction. So I think it extends the population of patients with diabetes who might benefit. Also, there were some key safety findings from this trial. With other trials in this area, there had been raised some concerns about amputations of lower extremity and of stroke. And so we were very careful in evaluating those endpoints in this trial, and being the largest and longest duration study, we had the most of those endpoints, and we really didn't see any risk. So I think it helps in two ways: one, to extend the population of patients who might benefit, and also to reassure us about some of the concerns that may have been raised previously.
So as we talked in the preamble to this, this is an exploding area, and there's a lot of other drugs in this class and some other classes in the diabetic world. These trials are coming out literally almost daily.
Yeah.
So if we take the trial we're talking about now, and we talk about DECLARE-TIMI-58, how does that fit in with what else we know with some of the drugs in this class or maybe some of the other classes?
Sure. So you're right. I think as I started out, I said, you know, it's been 20 years since we had any drugs that we knew to improve cardiovascular outcomes. And really now it's been about 3 years, and we've had, you know, probably close to a dozen favorable studies that have come out over that period of time, really in two classes. One, the SGLT2 inhibitors, the one that was studied here, and then another class called GLP-1 receptor agonists. And so one of the things that we did for our trial is we did a meta-analysis of the three large cardiovascular outcomes trials with SGLT2 inhibitors. And I think what we observed with that, you know, bringing together that part of the field, is that as we had seen in DECLARE, the biggest benefits were in heart failure. And those benefits were present whether you had cardiovascular disease at baseline or didn't, whether you had heart failure at baseline or didn't, regardless of what your kidney function was. So broad heart failure benefits. We also saw that there were significant benefits in terms of reduction of the progression of kidney disease. And so in that case, really 30-40% benefits in terms of progression of kidney disease or harder kidney outcomes like end-stage renal disease and kidney death. So I think there's some clarity in terms of this class of drugs. The GLP-1 receptor antagonists, they seem to be more effective for some reason in reducing the ischemic events, so myocardial infarction and stroke. So I think that as we put it all together, we're starting to develop some drugs in diabetes that really do have important effects that can help our patients reduce hard cardiovascular outcomes, not so dissimilar to some of the drugs we use all the time, like ACE inhibitors and beta blockers, I think would be reasonable examples. And so it raises the question, and I think the need for cardiologists to learn about these and to use these in our preventive armamentarium.
So just one last quick question. It seems to me from the results of this trial and others that I'm reading, we're getting to the point where these drugs are showing benefit from a cardiovascular standpoint, independent of glucose control or hemoglobin A1C control. So I could see cardiologists now calling up internists and saying, you know, this drug should be considered in those patients. And by the way, in the meantime, still do what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's right. The way I have said this a few times is that in some senses now with diabetes care, it's how you lower the blood sugar, not how much you lower the blood sugar. And that we as cardiologists, like we do with lipids, you know, with statins or with blood pressure, that we should be thinking about the agents that we know prevent cardiovascular outcomes. And so whether many cardiologists will become familiar with writing prescriptions for these drugs, managing the potential complications and interactions with other drugs, or whether, as you said, that we work to provide good communication with our diabetes and primary care colleagues, I think this makes a lot of sense. And so I will often, when I see a patient in the clinic who is at risk and who would be appropriate for these medications, I talk to the patient about that. I say there are other drugs for diabetes that might be helpful for you. And then I will either write a letter or contact the prescriber of their diabetes medications and have a discussion about that.
Steve, thanks for sharing the importance of this trial and the clinical implications. And nice having this discussion with you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of Axcell, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axcell and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/Axcell.